Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And you're very welcome to a special episode of At the Margin. This episode is a panel discussion with members of the Executive Committee of the Irish Society for Women in Economics, or ISWE for short. I'm joined by Bronagh Coffig, Karen Arlsami, Dara Flannery and Juana Paya to discuss the issue of women in economics and what motivated the creation of ISWE. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Maybe we could kick off this discussion where we maybe go around and everybody can just introduce themselves and say where you're working.
Thanks, Niall. Yeah, so my name is Bronagh Coffig. I'm co-chair of ISWE, the Irish Society for Women in Economics, along with Dr. Orla Doyle in UCD. So ISWE, the Irish Society for Women in Economics, we came out of the Athena Swan process in UCD. So the Athena Swan process is an accreditation process for academic institutions across Ireland and the UK, where departments within a university are awarded bronze, silver or gold on the basis of gender diversity. And the UCD Economics Department went through the Athena Swan process under Dr. Orla Doyle in the department there. And one of the commitments from that process was to set up ISWE, an Irish Society for Women in Economics. This was back in kind of April or May earlier this year. Orla hosted a Cross Ireland collaborative workshop to start sense checking the idea and put it out to people. And from that, myself and Orla are now co-chairs, and we've built an executive committee with representation from institutions across the country. We are kind of working around three core pillars for delivery. So we've got public debate and discussion, life cycle and career and education and training. And then we have a governance working group, and we have a communications and kind of outreach working group. And the intention behind each of these pillars is to explore the barriers and to women's participation in economics and the implications of that, and to use that data and evidence to affect impact and to influence changes in these sectors. At the moment, we are building a mailing list and a registry of female economists across the country. And we're on Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram, and really keen for anyone who's interested to get in touch.
Very good. Karen?
Hi, my name is Karen Arlsami. I'm a final year PhD student at University College Dublin.
Very good. Dara?
Dara Flannery. I'm a lecturer in economics at the Kemmy Business School in the University of Limerick.
Very good. And Juana?
Hi, I'm Juana Pea. I'm an assistant professor in the School of Economics at UCD.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks, guys, for coming along here for this discussion. I suppose, in terms of what we're discussing, we're looking at maybe diversity in economics and women in economics and the Irish Society for Women in Economics. But maybe just to kick it off, and it's probably a bit obvious, but I suppose it's a nice way to anchor the discussion. What exactly is the issue that we're concerned with here, in terms of, I suppose, broad strokes?
Thanks. Well, I guess, thanks, Niall. I guess I'll kind of give a bit of context from an ISWE perspective. I think for ISWE, the Irish Society for Women in Economics, what we're aiming for is to support diversity in economics. And that's diversity in voices in terms of who's making decisions, and what the design is. So if we think about economics as really being about outcomes and then the design structures for those outcomes, we know that who's designing those structures really matters. So in the tech sector, we think an awful lot about UX, so user design. And we know that having representation in terms of plurality of voices in design really matters for policy impacts and policy outcomes. And in Ireland, we know that we only have 22.5% of our TDs are women. So the people making decisions is really underrepresented. And then when we think about who the structures, the design structures within that, in the civil service, with 18 government departments, only four of them are led by women. And eight government departments actually have less than 50% women in senior leadership roles. And there's two government departments that have no women in senior leadership roles. So when you track that through to who's making decisions and who's designing the economic structures, which set the context for Ireland's strategic delivery, both now and going forward, it really matters to make sure that you've got people who are thinking outside of their own boxes, their own life experience, their own world experience to set where we want Ireland to go. And we know that from a production process, if you think of economics in a production line, we know that it starts really early on. So I think the ratio of girls to boys studying economics at Leaving Cert level, and Dara will know an awful lot more about this, it's about 37% women and 63% men. So it starts really early on. And how that tracks through then, that tracks all the way through, all the way up to the top, whether it's the top or sideways in terms of design and outcomes for Ireland as a whole. We know that matters. And ISBE really is about trying to support diversity in voice and just allowing for representation and a broader conversation more generally. There's voices that are being heard and then there's perspectives that are being brought in. So we know that having different voices at a table matters for policy design and policy decisions. And that impacts on every level. Whether it's, we look at the case of the makeup of NEFIT at the moment, so that's particularly male. We know that the impact of that then had massive impacts in terms of factoring in the decisions in the early days of the pandemic, the decisions on restrictions into, say, on childcare and childcare impacts. And that then comes down to it's who's thinking about what when you're at the table. And that impacts on every level. So whether it's a taxation decision, whether it's the direct effects of policy on, say, on the tax, or it's the indirect effects. So we know that women were more impacted, were much more impacted from working from home over the course of the pandemic. So there was a McKinsey study, I think, which outlined that women were 1.8 times more likely to have negative job impacts from increasing household responsibilities over the course of the pandemic. And that's the indirect impact, say, of policy decisions that are being made. So you've got that interaction between what decisions are being made, who's making those decisions, and then thinking about how did that actually track through for people on the ground. So the challenging thing for us, I think, is that we know it impacts on every part of the policy production line. And I guess that's where Wana, Dara and Karen will have the detail on the different sectors. But ISBE really is about trying to provide that strategic overview on how do we start reflecting on this objectively, on are we making the best possible decisions that we can? And are we really thinking about how those decisions we make impact on the diversity and the plurality of what Ireland is today in 2021?
Okay, well, thanks. That's a great overview of, I suppose, the general problem. So when it comes to maybe digging a bit deeper then in terms of what's driving these issues, you mentioned that we have situations such as, you know, different decisions across the life cycle and how maybe it perhaps affects women in a different way than it affects men. Perhaps this is something that Wana, you've done work on or you're more familiar with?
So I think many of the issues that Brona mentioned can be traced back to a few common drivers. So first, we know that an important constraint that may contribute to the lack of women in so-called traditionally male-dominated fields is the scarce number of female role models. So young women don't see successful women in these male-dominated fields, and then they may select out of these professions. So the question is then, why do these historical imbalances between men and women persist in different professions? And one compelling explanation in a recent book that you may have heard about on career and family by Harvard economist Claudia Golden is the rise of what she calls greedy jobs. But the fact that there are professions and careers that are very time demanding that require you to be available long hours and at a moment's notice. And she shows that While capable men and women start at the same pay when graduating college, 10 years after graduation, there are huge differences between men and women in terms of earning. Men get promoted, selected into higher earning jobs, while women don't manage to climb the corporate ladder just as fast. And the main reason for this seems to be the arrival of children. When children arrive, one of the parents has to step back from very time-demanding jobs, and in most heterosexual couples, this is the woman. And we know from academic research that the effects of the arrival of children on women's earnings can be very, very large. Many studies have confirmed this across different countries and educational levels, and this is what the so-called child penalty results in women having around 20 to as high as 40% less earnings than men in the same profession. And I'd like to draw the attention maybe to science and academia, where most of us are here here today are from. And in this field, the evidence is even more grim. So a lot of studies show that mothers who are academic scientists are less likely to get tenure. So a large study from the US shows that just 27% of mothers who are academic scientists get tenured, as opposed to 40% of fathers and 46% of women without children. And closer to home, for example, in Ireland, we know that, for example, while 41% of academic positions in economics are held by women, only 32% of these women, of full professors are women. And I think there are many factors that contribute to this trend. For example, there's a lot of research that shows that women receive less credit than men for co-authored work in tenure decisions. Which makes them 15% less likely to get promoted when controlling for publications. They systematically spend more time in teaching, yet receive lower teaching evaluation than male colleagues. And women lack mentoring and external recognition. But at the core, I believe that an important reason for the fact that is the fact that academia is set up in such a way to value early career productivity. So PhDs takes 5 to 6 years to complete. And then sometimes this is followed by postdocs and 5 to 6 years of tenure track job, which means that the period in which academics are expected to be the most productive coincides with the period when most people are thinking about starting a family and raising children. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic exposed these inequalities between men and women even further. So as Rona mentioned, there's a lot of research that shows that across many disciplines, the competing demands of homeschooling, child, and other care duties have penalized the academic productivity of women a lot more than that of men. So while in the early months of the pandemic, we've seen that submission rates to academic journals have actually increased. People have published more. There were disproportionately fewer manuscripts sent by women as compared to men. And having had two 11-month-old twins at the start of the first lockdown with no childcare and the added work of having to move to online teaching, I can personally testify to the huge research impact, huge hit that research impact research activity took for a lot of us with caring responsibility. So I think, as Bruna mentioned, one of the main goals of ISWE is to assure that women and girls have appropriate role models within our profession, which will hopefully increase their likelihood to join the economics profession. And then once they join, what we hope is that they can benefit from the support of a network and mentoring that will allow them to realize their full. I think the differences don't happen at the hiring point. I think at the start of the career, this inequality in earnings between men and women across many professions, not just academia, has been shown to be very, very little. So at the start of the career, both men and women, they start with this more or less the same earnings, but it's later on there's a huge divergence, and this is across most professions. But I think it's this inequality is heightened in academia because of these, as I said, the way that the our profession really values early career productivity and how this just comes into kind of conflict with any ideas of starting a family and raising children.
Niall, just to add to that, there's some really interesting literature on the publishing side, which obviously like totally interacts with what you have access to. So we know that there's literature that demonstrates that women are held to higher standards in publishing. So women spend 6 months longer under review than male authors, and women's citations fall when they co-author with men. And there's a really interesting study just published by the LSE recently, which highlighted that publications by women authors are cited less than men, because men's research is more often focused on scientific progress, whereas research by social science, female social scientists often focus on social progress. So papers authored by women focusing on social progress are read more, but they're cited less. And then obviously that interacts massively in terms of what you have access to in terms of publications and what our current KPIs are for progression in an academic setting. So it's all wrapped up in and of itself.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. So is it the choice of topic that's causing that, or is it just a case of there's some sort of implicit bias?
The challenge with all of this, as economists, we're used to thinking often in not necessarily in binary terms, but in terms of like the proportion of effects in a given regression. And in reality, a lot of this, there's all these interaction variables in the reality here. So you've got female social scientists are potentially more driven towards answering social questions as economists. So papers then are focused on social progress and perhaps the more traditional philosophical elements of economics. So people read them more because they're kind of more interesting, really, potentially. That's my own personal bias in terms of what makes economics interesting. Whereas male authors are often potentially more focused on the mathematical constructs and the scientific progress of economics as a science, which means that we all know here when you're writing a paper, the first thing you do, you have to build your mathematical model. So you do cite the mathematical models, and you're interested potentially in the social question that tracks into, but you're probably not citing social progress authors in quite the same way, because you're building your own social argument, but you've rested that on the foundation of the scientific progress, which probably means that you cite more male authors inherently within that. Is that inherent bias, or is that the nature of how we've designed what economics papers look like in and of themselves, or is it the nature of like what we're tracking as good economics looks like? So,
okay, well, maybe we'll move on to the next topic then. So one issue that seems interesting as well is like the whole topic of underrepresentation in terms of public discussion and debate. Perhaps, I think, Karen, you have some information for us on that.
Yeah, thanks, Niall. And Brona already talked a little bit about this earlier and gave a fantastic overview, I think. So women are underrepresented in public debate and discussions. So European data, for example, show that women are underrepresented in political decision making at local, national and European levels. And so far, Sweden is actually the only country to score over 90 on something called a political power indicator, which is based on the share of women ministers, members of parliament and women in regional assemblies. So how does Ireland compare to this, right? So Ireland is actually slightly below the EU average at about 40 on this indicator. So in that sense, we are kind of behind. And definitely the lack of women's voices in key decision-making roles means that their viewpoints are excluded from policies, which has an impact on the effectiveness and policies and potentially the distributional effects that these policies may have in the population. So Brona did talk about the NFET, right? The composition of NFET. So there's actually this study that analyzed COVID-19 task forces from over 80 countries. And they find that 85% of these expert groups consisted mainly of men. And this is actually really depressing, because we know from the evidence that women were actually hit harder socially and economically. And to not have enough representation of women on these groups could have had implications for the types of policies that these countries could have implemented to address these gaps that women experienced. So basically, the underrepresentation of women in key decision-making roles is not just a matter of fairness, but it's also the fact that it can have huge implications on policy effectiveness. So we're basically having a trade-off between not including women and actually potentially making policies worse off.
Okay. And in terms of what's driving this effect, is it similar to what we discussed already in terms of decisions across the life course?
Yeah, definitely. One part of it is that, and I was also reading research about the fact that women actually face stronger backlash in social media. So they are criticized more often, and the criticisms can actually take a very almost, I would say, dangerous nature, right? Because recently I've read, for example, that politicians in the US, so Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is very vocal, and Ilhan Omar, they've actually received death threats from Republican leaders. And, you know, you're thinking, going, oh my goodness, like if I'm thinking about trying to run for these type of positions, I'm going to be pretty scared. Yeah. That's one aspect. And they may also have less time. So if women are spending more of their time in domestic tasks like child rearing, taking care of children and so on, they may just not have the resources to time and also to networks to seek a career in politics.
I guess I think it's really interesting that we're thinking about it from a decisions across the life course perspective, because as Karen has just outlined, there's a whole range of factors in any given individual's decision. So it might be a decision for self-preservation. So from a political perspective, we know that in Ireland that there's really big barriers to women entering politics. So it's not just cash. It's the selection committees in and of themselves. It's confidence. It's feeling secure in social media. So there are 22.5% female TDs in the Dáil. That's on the basis of there currently being a 30% selection quota for female politicians, which will rise to 40% in the 2023 local elections. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the women being put forward are supported or enabled to get there. And then when we layer on, I think, these elements around the design structure, say, in the civil service. So if we go back, I think when Karen was talking about NEFIT and the lack of female representation within the Irish structures, when we know that the Department of Health in and of itself, of the eight senior leader roles in the Department of Health in Ireland, only two of them are women. So when we think about it, well, that's not necessarily a choice as to whether or not you get promoted or you're going for it. But it might be about what options are available to you. So I think we need to just be mindful of what is an individual's choice and what the choices are that are available, and whether or not those choices what those choices reflect in and of themselves from a social perspective and the structures that we've set up for access.
Maybe move on to the last topic then. And so Dara, you have some information on education and training and how that affects maybe the lack of diversity.
So I think, as Bronagh mentioned, if you look at secondary education in Ireland, roughly, and it hasn't changed in the past almost 10 years in terms of the proportion of males and females doing economics at the Leaving Cert, it's roughly around 2/3, 1/3. So, it's around 35% female in terms of at Leaving Cert. In terms of performance, if anything, girls are outperforming boys in terms of that. There's no real difference in terms of performance. When you go to third level, then that proportion actually at undergrad stays somewhat consistent. It's about a third in terms of taking economics as an undergraduate study. And then this is from the HEA statistics, and the same at postgrad then as well. So I suppose that highlights some issues at hand, but it also kind of helps identify, is there potential in terms of, you know, that pipeline, does it start earlier, basically, you know, in terms of second level. And I suppose from a personal point of view, it was just interesting, you know, it would be interesting for me as a lecturer in economics, as a course director here as well. I teach first years as well, where first year arts, where they make a choice, you know, at the end of first year of why people make those, even when they get to college, you know, why they make those choices. And I see it in front of my eyes in terms of gender representation isn't, I hate to say, but isn't great in terms of particularly at the postgrad level, from what I see in economics. So it's just those kind of questions, and delving into those questions, I think are interesting, you know, why you might see those trends. Is it like in the Irish case, is it structural? Is it that we don't, that if it's, you know, single sex schools, for instance, question, we don't know the answers to these yet, but hopefully we'll get to them, for instance, that, you know, single sex schools, all girls schools, do they not offer economics? Is there reasons for that? You know, is there reasons why we can help explain and potentially improve these kind of statistics? But they're somewhat remarkable statistics for, in terms of Australia as well, those statistics, like of a third, two thirds, are relatively consistent in the UK and Australia as well, relative to Ireland as well. So it's kind of interesting in that kind of sense as well. Those kinds of statistics and getting at the reasons for those, I think, would of interest to the group as well.
when I bring it all together in my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds like we have an issue where maybe at school it seems to be pretty level, but then especially when you get to postgrad, there's maybe more men than women going towards studying economics. So it's important to understand why that is the case. And then for the women that stay on doing economics, there's difficulties when you get to certain stages of your life that it coincides with certain career crunch points, and there's a bottleneck there in terms of time and resources. And then perhaps even when it goes on to maybe more advanced roles, there are other things in place in terms of other situations you have to deal with that maybe perhaps are a further barrier.
I think, to be honest, that kind of ties in nicely even with the different pillars that Brona and Orlan have kind of spearheaded inside in the society. So, you know, you have different pillars that have, and we've kind of, as a committee, been assigned different tasks and, you know, to drive things in different kind of areas. And, you know, you have life cycle and career, you have public debate, you have education and training, these three kind of pillars that we have different groups involved and different subcommittees, almost, or subgroups involved to look at and to look at these things and bring them together then as a group when we meet to discuss them. You know, that there are different issues at different point along the life cycle that, you know, that might need different solutions or different interventions as such, or can be informed by different research across the world or in Ireland, as the case may be. So the map you set out there, Niall, I suppose, explains well, kind of motivates well in terms of the design of ISWE in a way, in terms of those pillars and the structures that have been put in place, you know. So
So I know these are the questions that you're trying to answer, so you don't have the answers at the moment. But is there any research in an international context on each of these steps, maybe starting with education? Why is it that maybe men are more inclined to stick with economics than women?
Well, just there's research in Australia, so it's driven by the Reserve Bank in Australia around surveying, just like a lot of things, just, you know, when you don't know the answer, you should collect new data potentially with a kind of fairly novel kind of research question. So they sampled high school students essentially in Australia and asked them in terms of their views in economics and looked at, analyzed it then across socioeconomic and across gender. And what they found, I know it's getting away from cause and effect, it was more just looking at it in a general kind of issue, but it was, you know, that girls in high school tended to see, didn't see economics as important to society. There were slight gaps in terms of that, in terms of gender. And as well as that, there was, could do well in it was a big thing in terms of, like, girls didn't feel as strongly as boys at that age that they could do well in a discipline like economics. So I think, you know, there's something going on there in terms of, I suppose, that if it's a perception or if it's coming true in terms of from teachers, if it's, you know, a role model type of effect, that there is, even at that relatively young age, in terms of kind of middle of high school, that there is the perception that, oh no, if I pick economics, I won't do as well compared to something else or compared to boys, or, you know. So there hasn't been anything in the Irish kind of case for that, but that's one thing in terms of that points towards some potential drivers.
And we know that as economists, I think we all know how hard it is to explain what we do or what our jobs are to people outside of economics. So I think as a discipline more broadly, people are always a little bit unclear as to what it is. And I think trying to communicate that to 16 or 17 year olds is really challenging. When we layer on top, YouGov did an interesting poll. YouGov in the UK did an interesting poll just a couple of years ago. Economists were third from the bottom in terms of who the public trusts. So we ranked just above politicians and local politicians. So we're not doing too great in terms of public accessibility. So there's probably a disciplinary question for us more broadly there as well, which compounds everything that Dara was outlining.
Even within that Australian survey, you know, that you can see there's statistical differences between boys and girls in terms of, like, the girls were more likely to say that studying general business is more interesting to them compared to studying economics. So, you know, which, you know, the economist in me would find galling, you know, that you'd find marketing or something like that more interesting, you know. So getting at the reasons, again, is it school specific? Those kind of reasons behind that, within that, again, I think are probably interesting to look at again, but it's early days yet, so we'll get there, hopefully.
Yeah, just that's helpful to try and understand in terms of that stage of the process, the whole education stage. But then when it comes to the life cycle stage, I suppose it's clear to understand what the problem is, but in terms of what the solution is, it's not so easy.
When it comes to this decision being taken in inside the family, what we see, the evidence so far, is that more often than not in heterosexual couples, it's the woman that decides to kind of take a step back from this greedy job, kind of time-consuming jobs that I was mentioning earlier. So leaving this at the decision of the household, we have seen, does not improve women's career progression. So I think that there have been countries that have tried different models that seem to work better, in which, for example, there are countries in which the parental leave is split between men and the woman. So both men and women can take, so there's 12 months of parental leave, and that can be shared among the mother and the father. But then the more the father takes, the parental leave gets extended. So you benefit for more months if the father takes a disproportionately larger share of this. But I think this can go a long way in just bridging this gap in terms of career development between men and women. But in terms of the goals of our association of ISWE, when we think of the life cycle and career pillar, what we mainly look at the moment is to try to support and promote the career development of female economists. And as I was mentioning earlier, there's a lot of evidence that shows that the fact that women get less access to mentoring and social networks that support research activities can be an important barrier to female economists' careers progression. So our first goal with ISWE and under the life cycle and career pillar, for example, is to build a public registry of women economists in Ireland. And with this, we want to establish a mentoring program where early career economists can benefit from advice from more senior ones. And I think we believe that the creation of such a space where women and men can share experience and we can provide a network of support for those that identify as female economists can go a long way to making our profession more inclusive and help decrease this gap in career developments of women economists. We also hope to establish strong social networks and create opportunities for female economists based in Ireland to meet and establish collaborations. So, for example, we're working on setting up several networking events in the coming months where we could have career talks given by successful female economists. So all with the goal of creating a support network that can help women who chose the career of economists to realize their full potential.
Yeah, just building on what Juana and what Dara were saying about our three different pillars under ISWE. So we've got our life cycle and career, public debate and discussion, and education and training. And within each of these, you know, as economists, we're all really keen to understand what the issues are, but we're very focused on the point of ISWE is to try and have impact and influence and support a collective response to change. And with that, we have our superpower of collectivity. So bringing people together, as Juana was outlining, but we're all about data and evidence. So once you build your collection, you bring people together on the foundations of data, then that's what we're hoping for, to try and really spark the conversations and have the impact. So we've had a couple of different events so far where we'll try and give platform to women economists in Ireland at the same time as bringing people together. And yeah, we're planning on a few more over the next few months and just, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. And just to come to the final topic of when it comes to, you know, public discussion and debate, and that seems like a much more difficult one to try and deal with.
It is, it is quite a challenging one. So for now, our focus is first of all to provide platforms for female economists in Ireland to share their research with decision makers and the wider audience. And how we're doing this, as Brona mentioned just now, is we do have events coming up, and we have already done one on a budget analysis. And we do have events coming up where we are portraying the work of female economists and underrepresented researchers in Ireland to give them this space for them to share their work. And of course, we are also working on increasing the awareness and also to get more support on this issue of gender bias in economics. And one of the ways we are doing this is, of course, having these series of podcasts with Niall, who is very, we're delighted to be collaborating with Niall on this, to first of all, shed light on this issue of gender bias in economics, and then to talk about policy issues in various domains specific to Ireland.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Just one general question sort of comes to mind. When I think about, I suppose, the objectives of ISWE, and it's a bit like, it reminds me of when you're dealing with auctions, because you're trying to find, the solution is very hard to find, and by definition, it's sort of, I wonder, so what would be the benchmark of success? Is it a case of just finding, understanding a bit better of what's going on, or will you be looking at maybe trying to see, monitoring the change in diversity? It's because if we're dealing with preferences, it can be very difficult to measure.
Yeah. That's a fantastic question, Niall. And it's one that we're trying to hone in on ourselves, because like as a our problem is we are all economists. So we like to think about input, output, outcomes and what are you actually achieving here. And the challenge in any sort of kind of advocacy or influencing space is that it's much harder to measure, and it's much more fluid and organic and a whole rainbow of colors as to how you actually get there. And like as Karen was saying, if we think about it in the context of public debate and discussion, what we're trying to do is to uplift the conversation and start shining a light on some of the issues, the biases, and the implications of the fact that those biases exist. So like as Dara was outlining, we're undertaking these research projects and trying to understand, say, that how many schools across Ireland provide economics as a leaving cert subject, and what's the proportion of girls and boys taking that, and how does that track through. Once we get those bits of data, we'll put that sort of data out on our social media channels to spark the conversation and to spark the reflection. And in terms of what we can achieve ourselves, we can outline what do we have direct impact on, and then what can we try and hope to change in terms of a conversation. So we can't influence directly how many women are elected to the Dáil or how many women are secretary generals of government departments, but we can make sure and we can try and be part of the conversation to draw attention to the fact that this representation matters and that there's a pipeline along the way to get there. So we're trying to dig into what our superpowers are here as economists. It's data and evidence to spark a conversation that's about social change. And that's what we can feel good, I think, in the very fact that we've come together collectively, that as a bunch of economists who are very focused on getting it right, have managed to move ourselves into a space where we're thinking about, okay, influence and conversation and connectivity, rather than trying to make sure that we get to an answer or a solution along the way.
That sounds good. It sounds like just how you would evaluate an auction. It's if you have all the structures in place, then the outcome should work itself out, and that sounds like what you're working towards.
Fingers crossed.
I wonder, is there any difference in terms of for people working in industry? Is that something that you've anybody's encountered or?
Yeah, well, my experience working in economic consultancy, so I'm not there anymore, but was very focused and very supportive from a women in economics networks across the UK and Australia, and I think what you've got there is you have businesses that are thinking about how do we make ourselves a good place to work. And I think it's hard to hire technical economists in industry because you need people who are good with numbers and good with people. So you've got firms who have a commercial incentive to try and think about gender balance within from a business perspective, which is quite different, I think, to an academic or a public policy setting who have different incentive structures, really, at the very base level. Yeah.
Well, I did my undergraduate studies in Romania. And this is a country where the large majority of my econ and business lecturers were actually women. And this is the case for a lot of Eastern European countries where economics is, to a lesser extent, a male-dominated field, as it's probably seen in Ireland. So I personally benefited from a lot of great role models earlier on in my academic career. And actually the main reason why I ended up pursuing a PhD in economics was due to an amazing female lecturer that I had. And so I realized later on how much this has had an impact on my career choices. And what I hope to achieve and what we hope to achieve with ISWE is that we would maybe be able to have the same impact on future generations of female economists, of female students. So, for example, one great highlight of my career so far was having several MSc students come to me and tell me that they were inspired to do a PhD in macro because of my class. So I hope that, you know, ISWE can make an impact, such an impact at a larger scale. So that's why I'm very excited to be part of this project.
Thank you very much to my guests, and thank you all for listening. Season 4 is in the works, and we'll be with you shortly, and I'm looking forward to talking to you soon.